Hello, everybody, and thank you for tuning in to the Liberty Report. With us today is Daniel McAdams, our co-host. Daniel, good to see you today.
Good morning, Dr. Paul. Happy Monday.
Good. Okay, we're ready and raring to go. It's a new year and lots of things going on. Even in this very week we're looking at, there's going to be a lot of news. It's going to be a lot of political news. There's a lot of economic news, a lot of stock market and bond market news. And we could talk about that, but we consider thinking about that because it's always involved in what we talk about. But we want to start off today with a subject that we've dealt with many times in the past, and it's a very important issue dealing with civil liberties, our foreign policy, and what's happening to a certain individual, Julian Assange. And there was a ruling this weekend, and a British judge said that they cannot, the government cannot pick him up and dump him into a court that would be very hostile to him in Virginia, is the way I understand it, and that would be good news. Unfortunately, it doesn't deal with the real substance of the problem. Why has this man had to suffer like he has, you know, for almost 10 years? And this to me is tragic. But the, you know, the one thing, Daniel, that they used to get him out of there without forcing him back to go to America is that he would be a suicidal risk, which you can understand. It's been mentioned. His mental health is bad. His physical health is bad. And I think it's sort of ironic that they're using the issue of the possible suicide as sort of giving him a break and not putting him through something that would be deadly. At the same time, who caused his mental breakdown? It's the government. So it's a mixed way of using something, but under the circumstances, anything is better than nothing. But it also means that the one way we best could have taken care of Assange, if we were concerned, you know, for humanity and his health, would be not to have put him through all this, because you and I have talked about this, and many other experts have talked about this and said that he is very, very much mistreated, and the situation just makes no sense at all. Does not make us look good as a country that believes in liberty and tolerance. And when you think of it, we've mentioned so often, Daniel, that here they've gone through all this and all the other countries do our bidding, and he's not even an American citizen. He's never been tried. I don't even think he's been charged by anything, and we've done this much harm. It just means to me that the people in this country, Republicans and Democrats, generally are you know, insecure and intimidated, where they are forced or coerced into doing something that to me doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, it was a surprise decision, Dr. Paul, because everyone expected UK magistrate Virginia de Raetzer to rule de Raetzer against Assange. She's been very hostile throughout the hearings toward Assange, and the suspicion was that she would extradite. That's why it was a huge shock both to Assange's supporters and to his detractors. And while on the one hand, as you point out, this is something to be very optimistic about, for the very specific reason that tomorrow or the next day he won't be handed into the clutches of the Eastern Virginia District of the Federal Court, which is really kind of a gulag court. I think they have a 99.999% prosecution rate. And basically, when you go into this court, when you go into this this prison, you never come out. So just the fact that he's not going to be going from Belmarsh, where he's been held since April of 2019 in solitary confinement, not great for your mental health in any way, to this horrible, horrible prison here in the U.S. is great news. However, unfortunately, Dr. Paul, the judge did not disagree with the merits of the case. Right. She did not disagree that Assange committed espionage, that what he did was wrong, that he went over the line. As you point out, her only concern is that the state of the U.S. prison system is so abysmal that there's a very good chance that he would commit suicide if sent to the U.S. So cautiously optimistic with a short-term victory.
Well, the way I understand it, they are charging him with conspiring to get into government records. And see, that's an issue. Maybe there's a legal issue there. I think, in a society that brags about civil liberties and liberty, that an individual like this, first, is he really under U.S. jurisdiction? And second, did he have his day in court? Does he get to be tried before they do it? But we think we can go around the world. You know, we have been known, both political parties have assassinated foreigners who are leaders in foreign countries, even the countries that aren't very nice and maybe guilty of some crimes. But can we take it upon ourselves for assassinations and making decisions like this? Because in a way, you know, if he doesn't really get a reprieve on this, he may well just die of illness, not necessarily by suicide. So that to me is a crime in itself. So it's amazing why our governments can be so intimidated and frightened by the truth. Truth, boy, really is something that intimidates people who don't tell the truth. And when you look at it too often, people in governments, and I imagine it's probably a pretty easy statement to make broadly, that there's very few countries whose leaders have never told lies. So they say, well, that's necessary to run a government. But some governments, and I think the more powerful they are, the more they have to distort the truth, we end up with, you know, a foreign policy that they were never allowed to know the full extent of what's going on. And here a few people, we've mentioned so many of the other whistleblowers too, that telling the truth is not good. Truth actually, you know, becomes treasonous. And you don't get a fair shake if you're up. And that was one of the reasons why, you know, whether it's Snowden or Assange, they don't come marching back and say, okay, I've had enough of this. I just want my day in court. Take me, try me. I know I'm innocent. They can't do that because anybody who knows anything would advise them against it. And that to me is sad.
Well, you know, back a few years ago, Dr. Paul, when the powers that be were not as insane as they are, and we were actually allowed to have conferences at the Ron Paul Institute, we did a whole conference panel with whistleblowers. And thankfully, we had Julian Assange who addressed us live. But we also talked to people like John Kiriakou, who went to jail over CIA torture. It wasn't because he tortured anyone, it's because he blew the whistle on the torture. So this is what happens to truth tellers. This is what happens to Assange. Assange did nothing any different than what the New York Times does on a daily basis. Publishes anonymous information from intelligence sources, et cetera, et cetera. But what he did is he exposed the deep state. He exposed the brutality, the raw brutality of U.S. foreign policy and what's being done in our name. And he did it in a way that extremely irritated, for example, the CIA. He showed what the CIA was doing to spy on us and looking at us as the enemies. When you embarrass the deep state and when you damage the deep state like this, as Chuck Schumer said, they've got 6 ways from Sunday to come back at you. And that's what they did. And that's the price that Assange is paying for doing the work of an actual journalist. And today, people may not even recognize that, Dr. Paul, because journalists are just state stenographers. They sit on the laps of those in power and say, please tell us what we need to write. So that's why it's so damaging and distressing that the judge basically agrees with the U.S. case against Assange. She just doesn't think that he should be put in a position where he could kill himself. And a couple of other little things about this, Dr. Paul, that are outstanding. He is going to have a bail hearing on Wednesday, which could be very good news. Just to get out and get some fresh air and some sunlight would probably do him enormous amount of good. However, looming darkly is a U.S. appeal of the decision. And the question is, are they going to say, hey, well, as long as this appeal is going, you can't have a bail hearing. You just got to go back to your tiny little cubicle and suffer some more. So I think the next little bit of good news, and we can cross our fingers or whatever we do in these situations, is that he gets bail on Wednesday, get a little bit of fresh air and some sunlight.
Yeah, I hate to dampen that enthusiasm for it, because that would be good. But when I think about it, there could be a downside to this, because he's out there roving around. And, you know, when we talk about they, the people who do this to him, both parties are involved, you know, in essence, it's the deep state, the people who control foreign policy and monetary policy, and they're rather ruthless when you think of how they treated the people who were anti-war back in the 60s. We had quite a few assassinations that occurred because of that viewpoint. So what they're what I think is dangerous is that if he's out on bail, the people who hate that as much, they're not going to have a vote in the Congress. The Congress is not going to buck the system, and they don't have the system, and maybe they really know that. So the people who really have the system are the one that's pulling the strings, whether it's at the Federal Reserve or the CIA, the FBI and all the rest. All I know is every day we see more information that we have a lawless society and we really don't have lawful government. And therefore the strings could be pulled, and, you know, there could be, you know, somebody would like to kill him, which is tragic. But yeah, obviously, if he gets out, I think there's a lot of people who are on his side that might do their very best to protect him. But you're absolutely right. That would be a real blessing. That would just be a wonderful thing. That would be a nice way to start off the new year. And I hope those people in our government that can do something about it and have a saying. There's a lot of voices in our government. We have the executive branch, but we have 535 others. We have some new members. Maybe they'll be bold enough to stand up and say, hey, let's do something decent on this issue. Let's just not pretend. But I think most of them pretend it doesn't exist. Daniel, do you recall many serious discussion with staffers when we were up there on these subjects? I never had a serious discussion. They don't even want to talk. They want to just ignore it.
I don't think I've ever had a serious discussion with a staffer, Dr. Paul.
Ever.
Because they're not serious people. But, you know, the real wild card here, and again, I hesitate to even bring it up in such a way because we've been disappointed so often, Dr. Paul, over the past 4 years. We've had expectations. But there have been members of Congress, and I believe Senator Paul is one of them, who have approached President Trump and said, you have the power to take away this injustice, to grant a pardon to Julian Assange for what he's done. And it would really be a crowning achievement for the president to do this. He spent 4 years railing about the deep state. Well, the deep state is responsible for what's happened to Assange. He said hundreds of times that he loves WikiLeaks and he loves Assange. Now's the opportunity, as the president faces what may be his last few days in office, to really do the right thing and to really stick it to the bad guys, the very same bad guys that have spent 4 years lying about him being an agent of Putin and this and that. These are the same people. Why don't you stick it back to him, Mr. President? Why don't you pardon Assange?
You know, there was a time in various countries of the world, especially in the third world nations and others, where there was not a whole lot of legal processes. People would get into trouble, or maybe they said something pro-American, and they're in deep, deep trouble. And boy, all they would just beg for, if I could only get to America and let them take care of this and let me have my trial there, and they would look up to America. Unfortunately, even American citizens now aren't saying, oh yeah, you know, I told them the truth, and the people know what's happening and they support what I've said, and they're terrified that if they go to court that they're going to be in worse shape and they won't get a fair trial. That's where the real problem is, and the judicial system is a reflection of this. The judicial system, you know, when you just think of Russiagate and all that nonsense going on, and I still happen to believe there's a lot of mischief going on in our election that was supposedly concluded but is not yet concluded. And that to me is sad. There's something seriously wrong with our judicial system as well as our monetary system and a few others. So liberty's been under the attack, and of course that's one of my personal goals, is try to reverse that whole thing and make it make us proud of our country, where you can get a fair shake in a court.
Indeed, Dr. Paul. Well, let's do a little bit of news roundup if you're ready, Dr. Paul. I think we've covered Assange and we're cautiously optimistic. one of the things we wanted to talk about next is this weird disappearance of the seasonal influenza. Now, it started out, they noticed in the southern hemisphere, which has winter when we have summer, and they have had a COVID problem down there, of course, but they noticed something weird happened. When winter came, there wasn't any winter flu, and it was very odd, and they reported it. And now we have it here in the United States, and this is according to the CDC. Anyone can go on Twitter and find a map, the two different maps of week 51 in the United States from 2019 and 2020. If you look back at the map of 2019, virtually the entire country is dark, it's purple. That means a very severe flu. For week 51 in the United States this year, it is virtually all green, which means minimal to no influenza. Now, everyone's scratching their heads, and we don't pretend to have the answer, Dr. Paul, but it is a very, very interesting phenomenon with some very interesting implications, particularly in this so-called pandemic era.
Yes, and, you know, the other thing that we have to think about is, you know, are the figures being fudged? What's happening to the tests? You know, we don't have much confidence in the testing for COVID. It seems like if they don't do the tests right, you can get more tests than usual and a lot more, and it's to their interest to do that. So we look at these figures, and this is something you imply that we don't have all the answers to. Is it says, say, the influenza is way down, and they're saying now that there's prepare, there's going to be a tremendous increase in COVID. But then, you know, when we've gone over these figures, sometimes if you go and look at the total number of people who are sick or the total number of people who die, it doesn't necessarily reflect what they're talking about, because I do not trust the figures that CDC and WHO report to us, because they say there's so many, and we do know that the tests have been giving us many false positives. So it's a jumble. This is where we really need somebody that would be honest with the numbers and try to figure it out. Who knows? It might even be helpful for the medical community. Right now, we don't have overconfidence in the medical community, because, you know, the chief sponsor of all this nonsense, you know, Fauci, you know, he's held up as a hero and a saint, because he has done so much for us, but he's a participant in this. And Daniel, he even admits it. He's been on both sides of some of these issues. So we can't really just sit back and think, oh, tomorrow they're gonna say what we wanna say and they'll be on our side and we're gonna find. We do have a few, and they spoke out and they got into a lot of trouble. In these last 6 months or so, people have lost their jobs because they tried to put a proper perspective on what this COVID is all about. And that's what we need. But this is an interesting subject that invites the whole notion. The argument somebody is using now that I am reluctant to accept, but I would look at it. And they said, oh, the reason is they're using masks and they're distancing, social distancing. That's why there's no flu anymore. Well, I don't know about you, Daniel, but I don't accept that one yet for the reason the flu is down.
Well, that's completely illogical. And it is something that they've put forward that, well, the flu's down because of masks. Well, at the same time, they say that COVID cases are skyrocketing. We have to have more masks and more lockdowns. So if the masks work against flu, then how come they don't work against COVID? So that's a real problem that they're having with the logic, you know, and there are many possibilities. One possibility is that they are falsely categorizing seasonal influenza as COVID. And we do know there are financial incentives to do so. The CARES Act has set aside tons and tons of money to classify people as COVID. I don't think that's so outlandish. There's another theory that COVID supplants the flu because it's a stronger virus and a more dominant virus. That may be the case anyway. But whatever the case, it is interesting. And it can't simply be brushed aside as some kind of weird phenomenon or nothing that's worth investigating. And as you say about Fauci, we do know that he's admitted over and over that he tells us lies for our own good. He calls it science, but as someone else said, it's, yeah, science. Political science is what it is. Yeah. And that's why people like Massey and Senator Paul have called him out as a liar. Ted Cruz, I think, called him out as a liar, for what it's worth. So we have accepted medical professionals like him who really are political individuals, and it makes it difficult for those of us who are searching for answers. You know, we get dinged for coloring outside the box sometimes, but we try to use their numbers. We try to use their approach, but they're all over the place. They change the numbers and they fudge them all the time.
Well, he's into it. He just moves along, and nobody really, well, we can't say nobody. You just mentioned a couple who will call him on it. But he's now talking about California. And it's not because California has been a good example of how to handle this and actually do something to contain the virus. He is saying that, by golly, he's threatening now that there will be a California-type lockdown for the country if they don't listen to him and do the things, because things are getting bad, and he's anticipating horrendous worsening of this whole crisis. So he's saying, well, we're going to do it because of California, and California is a wreck, and it hasn't helped. The mask hasn't helped. And then he's saying, if everybody doesn't do this, we have to expand it and for the whole country, and think, you know, if something doesn't work, you just do more of it and more of it. It doesn't make a whole lot of sense, especially in medicine. I was taught that if you keep doing that, you kill the patient. You know, if you keep giving him the wrong medicine, he's not getting, oh yeah, but I know it's going to work next year. So this is sort of, socially speaking and politically speaking, that's what they're doing. So much of what has been done this last year has not been good, and all they're saying is more and more and more. And then you have the same people come up who say, well, maybe we overstepped our bounds. We shouldn't have done that. Then they put him back up, you know, as example. And then he gets it backed up by Bill Gates. And Bill Gates, of course, is a perfect example of libertarian thinking and free market medicine.
You know, the strange thing is when you look at the landscape of the United States and you look at what states are doing well and what aren't, and you want to emulate the states that are successful, what is success? Well, a low death rate, a low infection rate, what have you. Why is it that Fauci consistently looks to the states that are performing the worst? Remember, he said New York is the model, and, you know, right as all the New Yorkers are dying. And now he's saying that California is the model. California has been in the most severe, extreme lockdown for months upon months upon months. The economy is a disaster. Every business with a pulse is moving out of the state. Yet everyone is forced to wear a face mask. Everyone is forced to social distance. Everyone is forced, literally forced, to stay at home. And the cases are skyrocketing. So why not look to Florida, which had a seasonal flu outbreak here that has already peaked and gone over? No face mask, no restaurants closed. What about South Dakota? The same kind of thing. They had a seasonal flu. It came and it went and it's gone. So why not look to the states that are actually doing something that works instead of the states that are doing something completely counterproductive to human life, to human activity, and even just simply to science? Honestly, Dr. Paul, I wonder why people aren't scratching their heads and saying, what is going on here?
Well, you know, I'm going to go on to another subject. And sometimes when we find these examples of real stupidity, we figure all you have to do is ridicule them a little bit, and you know, and they'll back off or something because it's so absurd. Well, I have one here now. I don't think we should bother ridiculing this, Daniel. It's too bad. It doesn't even deserve ridicule. But it just goes on and on. But it should be a reflection of what's going on in the minds of the people that promote this. And there's been a few changes in the new rules for the House of Representatives. And of course, on the opening day, they had somebody say a prayer. And the prayer was ended, you know, with the usual amen. And with also saying a woman. So we have to do things correctly. And this, you know, and when you read this, you know, you just don't want to believe this, as if their words similar, but it's craziness, and I think that's self-defeating. It's sort of like, I think the Democrats are scratching their heads. I wonder why we lost congressional seats. The president did get a lot of votes, but they didn't count them all. But anyway, the Congress was shifted definitely toward the Republicans. So I think that the one issue that they use is there's a lot of crime in the streets over there. And do you know that all these big cities that are in ruins, where there's most criminality and there's been riots and all that going on, they happen to be run by and have been run by Democrats, you know, for a long time. So they're saying, well, this is a whole thing is that the best way to treat this is get rid of the police. So they have these organized efforts to just get rid of the police. And they said, what do you mean you're not getting rid of it? We have to have the police there in case the politicians need one, and that has happened. But the whole thing is so bad that I think they're at the point that I think it's almost, it's unbelievable that Republicans aren't making more use of this, but evidently they've made some use of it, because it is so foolish that when you have the cities burning down and criminality going on, what you do is you make sure you don't have any police at all, instead of trying to correct the situation.
You know, Dr. Paul, I guess about 10 or 15 years ago, I watched the dystopian comedic film called Idiocracy, and it showed America in the future that had been so dumbed down people can hardly even communicate with each other. And it was very funny back then. But if you rewatch it these days, and it does have some strong language, by the way, but it's hardly funny anymore, because the language has been so tortured now that it's not even shocking. And this is an example of this Representative Emmanuel Cleaver, who ended his prayer with amen and all women. And it's so absurd on its face. It's such a torture of language. As Ben Shapiro pointed out, amen is a Hebrew word, and it means may it be so. All woman is a nothing word. It's made up out of thin air, and it means literally nothing. So the dumbing down of our society continues apace, and obviously now the 117th Congress has now enshrined Idiocracy as a centerpiece of its approach to legislation.
Well, you have to consider the fact that over 40 or 50 years, our federal government has been very, very much involved in taking over the educational system. You might have to say, boy, they've been very effective, you know, in what they want to do, because some of them really want this to happen, which is rather sad. But I still believe that the remnant is out there, and they're going to survive, and they're going to share the truth, and things will get better, but not on the first week of January in 2021. It doesn't look like it'll be that soon. Well, let's do a couple little more things here, Daniel. This was a pretty astounding thing, but it isn't astounding that it happened in Baltimore. Here, the headline is, Baltimore cop slams man on crutches into pavement. The crime: for improperly wearing a mask. He deserved it. He must have. That really annoyed the policeman. Fortunately, I think the policeman is going to be charged with, assault, but we'll wait and see what happens.
Yeah, this is the mental illness that's produced by what's happening, and it's terrible to see, and it's happening everywhere. I think the last thing we wanted to cover, Dr. Paul, is this, again, we talked about a little bit a week or so ago before Christmas, which is the strange situation where not only individuals and Americans, but healthcare workers are very hesitant to line up for the COVID vaccine. And it's happening over and over and over. And this is a phenomenon that I know that you've been watching.
Yes, and I think that is good news. I think the real vote that I like to watch is we hear the stories where neighbors turn against neighbors and friends against friends and people turn against strangers and yell and scream because they're spreading the virus and they won't even wear a mask. So that we have a lot of that. But what I think is wonderful is an example of Florida. And I keep thinking that one of the best places to resist what's going on is with the beaches, because young people, you know, the beach is a symbol of liberty for them, you know, and sometimes, you know, a little bit of wildness. So, but they do, so both ends of the continent, we have beaches, and there still is defiance, much more in Florida, of course, because they even got the governor to go along with a sensible approach. So they're able to do this. And I think that, you know, they're going out, and some of these events, they go out to the tens of thousands. Now, young people don't go up on ledges on mountaintops and jump off and see if they can fly. I mean, there's a limit to what they do. So I think if there was a great danger and they had everybody had 10 friends that died recently of a disease, they might be very, very cautious about what's going on. But they don't. And then all of a sudden you find evidence where sometimes you find out that going out doesn't hurt. And it's discovered, and now it's been in the news, that the people who don't are more likely to get it when you're indoors and in your house, a spread of COVID. But no, they still say no, you can't do this. They don't change their mind. And right now, the care workers are waking up. They're close to it. They see this. And they didn't all of a sudden have a special course from libertarian physicians about, you know, the vaccines. Their observations are, and they're hesitant. And now I think that's going to get much worse. I think that's going to go epidemic, because as time goes on, you're going to see more and more cases of complications reported. And that to me would be very, very sad, because it's possible there's a lot of very serious things ahead. And I'd like them to wise up with a little bit more just common sense than waiting for some real serious effects to happen.
Well, you know, people act according to their own self-interest. I mean, that's sort of a basic tenet of human psychology. And the fact is, if people really believe that they would benefit from this vaccine, particularly, as you say, healthcare workers who are closer to the action, you think that they would line up, but they're not lining up. In fact, Houston Methodist Hospital, which is just up the street, they're offering a $500, quote, bonus, we might call it a bribe, for their own workers to take the injection, because there has been a lot of hesitancy. Some members of Congress have proposed a $1,500 stimulus check if you go take the drug. Clinton's old economic advisor said, pay people $1,000 to take the vaccine. Well, if the vaccine was the best thing since sliced bread, why on earth would you have to pay anyone to take it? So that skepticism is healthy. And as people have said, you know, this really has not gone through a trial phase. And you've talked about it for months, Dr. Paul, what's happened in the past. I thought I would close out, if that's okay,
because sure thing.
We're chewing on a lot of stuff here in our short period of time. But I would just close by, thanking everyone for your wonderful response to our year-end fundraiser at the Ron Paul Institute. We did pretty well. Hope we can do better, but keep the show alive, and we need your support. The second is, I want to recommend, and I didn't get a chance to talk about it, maybe Dr. Paul and I will chew on a little bit tomorrow, an excellent article that we've reprinted at ronpaulinstitute.org website. And it is from the American Institute for Economic Research. It's called Pandemic Response is Our Vietnam. Terrific article. I'll link to it in the show notes. But it talks about the parallels between the response to COVID and Vietnam. Groupthink, mission creep, sunk cost fallacy, the disproportionate effect on the poor. Down, down, down the line. At first, you might think these two are incongruous, but if you read the article, you're going to really find it's very fascinating, and it shows how little we've learned from history. Dr. Paul?
Very good. And I'm going to close with just a comment about something we've talked about a lot, and that is how the children have been treated. I mean, this inability for children to go to school. They're the safest group. Anybody under 40 is in a very, very safe group, but under 20 is even safer, and kids are just not in great danger. But to see the little kids, young kids, sometimes 2 and 3 years old, are wearing these masks, and that episode we talked about where the individual 2-year-old got cost off an airplane with her family because she didn't want to wear this mask. She probably had more common sense than the rest of them had. But I think it's so tragic what's happening socially, emotionally, and also educationally. They're not able to pursue it. And even now, it's not straightened out. It has a lot of way to do it. And if Fauci has his way, it's going to get worse. There's going to be more lockdowns. That's really, really sad. You know, there's also been a few reports out that the vaccine complications, they're not horrendous in numbers, but I think they'll probably increase, and that will be sad. But they're also coming up with lost vaccine. It sort of disappeared, and with people not wanting it, I just wonder if there's a connection. Maybe they don't get it to the right place and it's not at the right temperature. There's reports that some have been spoiled. So it's not a smooth activity. But why should we expect a smooth operation, which could be, you know, if it were very, very necessary, you'd want it to be as effective as possible and efficiently run. But why would we give it to the post office to run? We'd probably say, well, the post office messes up sometime, and the bureaucracy of our federal government messes up sometime too. So that is why, whether it's taking care of medicine or education or your personal life, you don't want to depend on the government. You want better treatment than that. When it's turned, any function like that is turned over the government, that to me is a sad story, because the government is incapable of being turned over to bureaucrats and rejecting the notion that people take care of themselves much better than a government can. So the whole thing is government should be there to protect our liberties, protecting our free choices, and having confidence enough that people will make the right choices in spite of some of the shortcomings that come with that. But why pick out individuals that, when they make a mistake, when you become the Fauci of the world and you make a mistake, and they've been making them for about a year now, that's serious. It's preventable. And we are seeking the truth our very best way we can to find out, to put a proper perspective on this politically and scientifically. And that's what we need right now. And fortunately, I think our numbers are growing. People are sick and tired of it. And and I think that's why the opposition, their back is up against the wall. Well, we got to do more, be more before there's another state that rejects all this stuff that we think will save their lives. Anyway, we'll see what happens. There's a lot ahead for us to find out exactly what transpires, whether it's COVID or whether it's our economic system that we're dealing with today. I want to thank everybody for tuning in today to the Liberty Report. Please come back soon.